Part 9. Obstacles to Truth.
I turned from the life of our circle, acknowledging that in order to understand life, I must understand not an exceptional life such as ours, who are parasites on life, but the life of the simple laboring folk, those who make life, and the meaning which they attribute to it. That meaning was as follows. Every man has come into the world by the will of God, and God has so made man that every man can destroy his soul or save it. The aim of man in life is to save his soul, and to save his soul he must live godly. This meaning the people obtain from the whole teaching of faith, transmitted to them by their pastors and by the traditions that live among the people. This meaning was clear to me and near to my heart, but together with this meaning, much was inseparably bound up that revolted me and seemed to me inexplicable. Sacraments, church services, fasts, and the worship of relics and icons, the people cannot separate the one from the other, nor could I. I attended the services, knelt morning and evening in prayer, fasted, and prepared to receive the Eucharist, and at first my reason did not resist anything. The very things that had formerly seemed to me impossible did not now evoke in me any opposition. My relations to faith before and after were quite different. Formerly, life itself seemed to me full of meaning, and faith had presented itself as the arbitrary assertion of propositions to me quite unnecessary, unreasonable, and disconnected from life. Now, on the contrary, the articles of faith were far from presenting themselves to me as unnecessary. On the contrary, I had been led by unquestionable experience to the conviction that only these propositions, presented by faith, give life a meaning. I argued as follows, telling myself that the knowledge of faith flows, like all humanity, with its reason from a mysterious source. That source is God, the origin both of the human body and the human reason. As my body has descended to me from God, so also has my reason and understanding of life. And consequently, the various stages of the development of that understanding of life cannot be false. All that people sincerely believe in must be true. It may be differently expressed, but it cannot be a lie. And therefore, if it presents itself to me as a lie, that only means that I have not understood it. Furthermore, I said to myself, the essence of every faith consists in its giving life a meaning which death does not destroy. Naturally, for a faith to be able to reply to the questions of a king dying in luxury, of an old slave tormented by overwork, of an unreasoning child, of a wise old man, of a half-witted old woman, of a young and happy wife, of a youth tormented by passions, of all people in the most varied conditions of life and education, if there is one reply to the one eternal question of life, why do I live, and what will result from my life? The reply, though one in its essence, must be endlessly varied in its presentation. But this argument, justifying in my eyes the queerness of much of the ritual side of religion, did not suffice to allow me to do things which seemed to me questionable. With all my soul, I wished to be in a position to mingle with the people, fulfilling the ritual side of their religion. But I could not do it. I felt that I should lie to myself and mock at what was sacred to me, were I to do so. At this point, however, our new Russian theological writers came to my rescue. According to the explanation these theologians gave, the fundamental dogma of our faith is the infallibility of the Church. From the admission of that dogma follows inevitably the truth of all that is professed by the Church. The Church, as an assembly of true believers united by love and therefore possessed of true knowledge, became the basis of my belief. I told myself that divine truth cannot be accessible to a separate individual. It is revealed only to the whole assembly of people united by love. To obtain truth, one must not separate, and in order not to separate, one must love and must endure things one may not agree with. Truth reveals itself to love, and if you do not submit to the rites of the church, you transgress against love, and by transgressing against love, you deprive yourself of the possibility of recognizing the truth. I did not then see the sophistry contained in this argument, and thanks to it was able to accept and perform all the rites of the Orthodox Church without understanding most of them. I then tried with all the strength of my soul to avoid all arguments and contradictions and tried to explain as reasonably as possible the Church statements I encountered. When fulfilling the rites of the Church, I humbled my reason and submitted to the tradition possessed by all humanity. I united myself with my forefathers, the father, mother, and grandparents I loved. They and all my predecessors believed and lived, and they produced me. I united myself also with the millions of common people whom I respected. Moreover, those actions had nothing bad in themselves. When rising early for church services, I knew I was doing well, if only because I was sacrificing my bodily ease to humble my mental pride, for the sake of union with my ancestors and contemporaries, and for the sake of finding the meaning of life. During church service, I attended to every word and gave them a meaning whenever I could. In the Mass, the most important words for me were, "Let us love one another in conformity." The further words, "In unity we believe in the Father, the Son, and Holy Ghost," I passed by, because I could not understand them. It was then so necessary for me to believe in order to live, that I unconsciously concealed from myself the contradictions and obscurities of theology. But this reading of meanings into the rites had its limits. Quite two-thirds of all the services either remained completely incomprehensible, or when I forced an explanation into them, made me feel that I was lying, thereby quite destroying my relation to God and depriving me of all possibility of belief. I felt the same about the celebration of the chief holidays. To remember the Sabbath, that is to devote one day to God, was something I could understand, but the chief holiday was in commemoration of the resurrection, the reality of which I could not picture to myself or understand. And that name of resurrection was also given to the weekly holiday. And on those days the sacrament of the Eucharist was administered, which was quite unintelligible to me. The rest of the 12 great holidays, except Christmas, commemorated miracles, the things I tried not to think about in order not to deny: the Ascension, Pentecost, Epiphany, the Feast of the Intercession of the Holy Virgin, etc. At the celebration of these holidays, I either devised tranquilizing explanations or shut my eyes in order not to see what tempted me. Most of all, this happened to me when taking part in the most usual sacraments, which are considered the most important, baptism and communion. There I encountered not incomprehensible, but fully comprehensible doings, doings which seemed to me to lead into temptation, and I was in a dilemma, whether to lie or to reject them. Never shall I forget the painful feeling I experienced the day I received the Eucharist for the first time after many years. The service, confession, and prayers were quite intelligible and produced in me a glad consciousness that the meaning of life was being revealed to me. The communion itself I explained as an act performed in remembrance of Christ and indicating a purification from sin and the full acceptance of Christ's teaching. If that explanation was artificial, I did not notice its artificiality. So happy was I at humbling and abasing myself before the priest, a simple, timid country clergyman, turning all the dirt out of my soul and confessing my vices. So glad was I to merge in thought with the humility of the fathers who wrote the prayers of the office. So glad was I of union with all who have believed and now believe, that I did not notice the artificiality of my explanation. But when I approached the altar gates and the priest made me say that I believed that what I was about to swallow was truly flesh and blood, I felt a pain in my heart. It was not merely a false note. It was a cruel demand, made by someone or other who evidently had never known what faith is. I now permit myself to say that it was a cruel demand, but I did not then think so. Only it was indescribably painful to me. I was no longer in the position in which I'd been in youth when I thought all in life was clear. I had indeed come to faith because, apart from faith, I had found nothing, certainly nothing, except destruction. Therefore, to throw away that faith was impossible, and I submitted. I humbled myself, swallowed that flesh and blood without any blasphemous feelings, and with a wish to believe. But the blow had been struck, and knowing what awaited me, I could not go a second time. I continued to fulfill the rites of the church, and still believed that the doctrine I was following contained the truth, when something happened to me, which I now understand, but which then seemed strange. I was listening to the conversation of an illiterate peasant, a pilgrim, about God, faith, life, and salvation, when a knowledge of faith revealed itself to me. I drew near to the people, listening to their opinions on life and faith, and I understood the truth more and more. So also was it when I read the Lives of Holy Men, which became my favorite books. Putting aside the miracles, and regarding them as fables illustrating thoughts, this reading revealed to me life's meaning. There were the lives of Macarius the Great, the story of Buddha. There were the words of St. John Chrysostom. And there were the stories of the traveler and the well, the monk who found some gold, and of Peter the publican. There were stories of the martyrs, all announcing that death does not exclude life. And there were stories of ignorant, stupid men who knew nothing of the teaching of the church, but who yet were saved. But as soon as I met learned believers, or took up their books, doubt of myself, dissatisfaction, and exasperated disputation were aroused within me. And I felt that the more I entered into the meaning of these men's speech, the more I went astray from truth and approached an abyss. How often I envied the peasants their illiteracy and lack of learning. So I lived for about 3 years.